This is how I'm going to die. Our first guest came to that grim realization last November when he was attacked and robbed in his Lansing home. Todd Haywood is a reporter for the Lansing City Pulse. He is gay. His attackers were two men he had met through a Craigslist ad seeking sex. His assailants were targeting gay men. Adrian James Tupper and Aaron Christopher Spiker agreed to a plea bargain in connection with multiple charges and thereby avoided possible life prison sentences. Still, both were sentenced to 17 to 55 years in prison. Today's Lansing City Pulse includes Todd Haywood's account of the attack and the aftermath. Yesterday, I spoke with him about it. I first asked Todd Haywood for more about how he first met the men who later attacked him. I'll advise listeners that parts of this story may be disturbing to some listeners.
We met on the internet. We exchanged emails, multiple emails, over a course of several hours. We had a phone conversation. We had two phone conversations and a couple of text messages. They came over. We ordered pizza. Pizza came. We ate. We had a good meal. We talked. We laughed. We joked. And then it became a crime.
All of a sudden? Or
yeah, all of a sudden. There was one of the gentlemen said that it was time to go ahead and let's go have sex. And so as I turned my back to them to go into the bedroom, I was grabbed from behind. My hands were handcuffed. I was shoved under the corner of my bed and beaten by both suspects on the side and back of my head.
How long did the attack last?
The beating part of the attack lasted approximately 45 seconds to 60 seconds.
How badly hurt were you?
Initially, the harm was significant swelling on the left side of my face. I looked like a overgrown malignant squirrel. Swelling in the back of the head where they had pummeled me, as well as cuts on the side of my head. I think the most significant sort of remaining problem is lack of feeling in my thumbs from radial nerve damage from the handcuffs.
For how long did you think the evening was going to proceed normally?
Until that moment that they grabbed me and put handcuffs on me.
And that was how long after they arrived?
About 2 hours.
Wow. You thought, this is how I'm going to die.
Yes.
Were you in the process of giving up, or did it look that hopeless? Or were you looking for a chance to elude these guys or fight back or what?
Well, I think it's important to understand that as somebody who has covered hate crime murders, I'm aware that more often than not in an instance like this, the victim doesn't come out alive. Obviously, yes, I was looking for how do I get out of this? How do I escape? But in fairness, the initial response was the fear response, and that is to freeze and go quiet.
When you were thinking you were going to die, were there other rational or irrational thoughts, for that matter, going through your mind?
Well, I think the most irrational one was, good God, what will everybody think? I mean, what does it really matter if I'm dead? What does it matter what people are thinking? I'm more, you know, I should have been more concerned about, will they catch these guys? Will they ever find them? That sort of stuff. And that never really went through my mind.
You write that you knew you were a hate crime victim during the attack. How did you know that?
You know, in fairness, that's an assessment based on my experiences. You know, people don't come and spend 2 hours with somebody and then attack them and rob them. Generally, if it's not a hate motivated crime, if it's just a robbery, they don't spend any time. There's no connection, conversation, that sort of thing. They just show up and they rob you. So at that point, it became pretty obvious to me, again, from my experience and reporting on these, that this was a setup,
but
that this was anti-gay.
During the attack, did they use slurs, anything like that?
No. In fact, at one point, they pretended to be police officers. And, you know, in a...
Even after the attack had started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in fact, while they were searching the apartment, one of them yelled to the other to make sure that they searched the whole apartment so they could get a search warrant, which, you know, for you and I is laughable because that's obviously not how that works. But I figured that would probably be an unwise choice.
We're talking with Todd Haywood. He was the victim of a robbery and beating at his home last year, and his attackers have been sentenced to prison. He tells his story today in the Lansing City Pulse and here on Current State. He also writes about the incident for TheBody.com, a website devoted to HIV content. The case could be considered by state lawmakers who are fashioning new hate crimes legislation. We'll get into that in just a minute. they robbed you as well. What did they steal?
Yeah, so they took all of my laptops. They took my cameras. They took my digital audio recorders with all the audio files that I had on them. They took my cell phone. And they also took all of my HIV medications. So they took a lot. It was approximately, I mean, when you everything was added up, it was almost $10,000 worth of stuff that they took.
And they took your HIV medications knowingly. I mean, for a reason.
Absolutely. In fact, they told investigators that they took my HIV medications because they wanted me to die of AIDS.
How did you escape, if that's the right word?
So when one of the suspects was done ransacking the house for the electronics that he was dealing, the other escorted me into my kitchen and told me to kneel. I did. He stepped out to consult with his conspirator, and I took that opportunity to jump up and shove my shoulder into the door, which shut the door. And I spun around with my hands still handcuffed behind me and locked the deadbolt. And the way my apartment is set up, standing there, I can look out the window into the parking lot. I saw the two of them look at each other like, what just happened? And they got in their van and drove away. At which point, you know, here I am, handcuffed. I had to go into my living room and sit on the floor to get my hands in front of me. My initial thought was, I'm going to get my cell phone and call 911. And that's when I realized the cell phone was gone. I got my hands in front of me and then went to the neighbors, and she called 911 for me.
Some people, no doubt, consider your actions reckless, but you did take some precautions. Tell us about those.
Sure. Let me first clarify for those who think that it's reckless to meet somebody on the internet. The reality is that this is dating in 2016. Yes, some people are still meeting in bars, but the vast majority of people are using social media as a way to meet. So this is not reckless or uncommon. This is happening gay, straight, bisexual, trans. It doesn't matter. This is how society is evolving. That being said, there are some real simple safety tips. Get a photograph, a face photograph. Get a cell phone number. Get a name. Get an email contact. All of those things worked together to really help identify these guys very quickly.
Tell us about the police response.
So I have to be real honest. I think the Lansing Police Department handled this phenomenally well. And I could not have been better treated by the detective who handled this case. I just don't have enough praise.
How were these guys caught?
Because I had their face photos, we were able to ID them. In fact, on 2 days after the attack happened on the 23rd, on Wednesday the 25th, I actually was sitting in the Lansing Police Department doing a photo lineup and was able to identify them from the photo IDs. A warrant was issued on November 30th, and they were arrested within hours by the fugitive team from the Lansing Police Department.
How much have you learned about your attackers?
Not a ton. I'm still trying to gain some more information on that.
And describe how the case made its way through the court system here in Ingham County.
In fairness, this went very fast in terms of the criminal justice system, right? I mean, there were two criminal cases that were associated with these two gentlemen. We do know that they were targeting gay men. There were three criminal reports that had been filed as because of their actions. Two of us pursued criminal prosecution. There are more victims out there. How many they are, we don't know, but there are many more victims out there. Because there were these two criminal cases there and a lot of evidence, because they actually made a confession to the police when they were arrested and admitted to this and admitted that they were targeting gay men because they were, quote, sick, end quote, and wouldn't, quote, report it to the police, end quote. It was easier for the prosecution department to actually get a plea deal. Although even in that, we had some hiccups because there were some games being played by the defendants. But at the end of the day, Seven months to go from police report to sentencing is extraordinary in felony cases in Ingham County.
Are you satisfied with the outcome?
I am. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little shocked at the sentence they got. I mean, they got 17 years to 55 years in prison. When I agreed to the plea bargain, I was told that the sentencing recommendation was probably going to be 3 to 5 years. So I, just like the defense attorneys, was incredibly shocked when the sentencing recommendation came back for 14 years, and was even more surprised when Judge Aquilina did 17 years.
you think your case could become a factor in legislation regarding hate crimes here in Michigan. How might that play out?
So I do have some indication that there's going to be hate crimes legislation introduced in July. Can't talk about the specifics yet, but I can tell you that we do believe that it is going to move forward. And I have a lot of hopefulness on that.
You also report that cyber hookup crimes are on the rise, both gay and straight. How much is known about that?
So there's no statistical tracking of any of that information. The only data that I could find on it was actually a blog from Law Media, which is bills itself as a crime reporting incident for the millennials. And they looked at between 2009 and 2013 cases that had been reported in the media involving murder and Craigslist, and they identified 58 cases.
We're talking with Todd Haywood. Todd was the victim of a robbery and beating at his home last year. His attackers have been sentenced to prison. He tells his story in today's Lansing City Pulse and here on Current State. He feels that the case could be considered by state lawmakers who are fashioning a new hate crimes legislation, and he says he expects that. You connected to the men who attacked you because you'd placed this ad seeking sex with another man or men on Craigslist. There have been warnings over the years about using Craigslist. Dangerous people sometimes respond to these ads, and not just the sex ads either, and then they commit crimes beyond the obvious. Why in the end were you willing to take that risk?
First of all, you can meet dangerous criminal people who have dangerous intents anywhere you go. You know, Bob Gross, who was the sports reporter who was murdered in 1996, met his killer in a bar on Michigan Avenue. Alden Judge met his killer driving down the street. You know, nobody shamed them for meeting their partner, these killers. So I want to be really clear that people with ill intent find ways to get to victims in multiple ways. That being said, since I was diagnosed with HIV, I have had social anxiety. And I know that that's strange because people see me on stage on a regular basis and they see me doing the reporting thing. But that requires taking medications to control that. And going into a bar for a social event is extraordinarily painful to me. It actually causes massive panic attacks, and it's just not an opportunity for me anymore. So really, the internet has become one of the only ways for me to meet people. And then you can add on to that, that, you know, being a person living with HIV in the state of Michigan right now, where we have this very draconian law that has been very poorly interpreted by the courts, I have to disclose my HIV status prior to sexual penetration. And the courts have been very clear that the only evidence that they'll accept is time-stamped evidence of disclosure. Well, I could meet somebody and say, hey, I'm going to videotape this disclosure. That's pretty dangerous. We know for a fact that people have been murdered because of their disclosures. I reported on a case out of Dallas, Texas, about a woman who was stabbed to death for disclosing her status. And that happens on an infrequent but far too frequent basis in the United States. And the other choice is to use emails to make that documented time disclosure. And that's what I have found myself being forced to do.
To people who hook up or date through the internet the way you did, what advice do you have?
I did everything that they recommend that you do. And what it shows is that when you get that face picture, when you get those cell phone numbers, when you get that email address, when you talk to them by cell to verify that they're actually the person, that if something goes wrong, there's evidence to get those people quickly.
You're a reporter for a publication that is gay-friendly. Your story indicates that there was a similar attack 5 days after yours. Why didn't the City Pulse cover your attack sooner? I mean, isn't it possible that other crimes might have been prevented if this story got some attention sooner?
In fairness, I was requested by both police and prosecutors not to discuss the case until the perpetrators were sentenced, convicted and sentenced. In this case, they pleaded guilty.
We've been talking with Todd Haywood, who writes about being the target of a gay hate crime in today's Lansing City Pulse, as well as for the website, thebody.com. Todd Haywood, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me.